I suppose it runs almost into years now ago, I decided that I'd got a very nice NIV study Bible myself, but I really needed a second one, a sort of second-hand one that I could use when I went out or something like that. I didn't want to take my special one with me. And so I wrote off to Amazon and I got this NIV. Clearly it came from America. And the person who'd had it before had sort of underlined, you know, various verses and made little comments in it as well. But almost the whole of the Old Testament was just brand new, never been touched, and I think probably never been read as well. And this tends to be the case with people. They don't read the Old Testament. Now, some of it actually is difficult to cope with. It really is. I'm reading Ezekiel at the moment, and it's not the easiest book in the Bible to cope with. But it's very important. And again, I read that in America, which is meant to be much more Christian than we are, I can't imagine, therefore, why they want to vote for Trump, but that's a different issue altogether. They're much more Christian than we are, we're told, and yet more and more people are not reading the Bible there. And that happens here as well. And that's why I'm doing this introduction. And we'll get it available in other ways, not just in this sermon. And what we want to do today is to look at the historical books. Now, to look at them properly would take, you know, a week. But we're just going to skip over the surface and look at some of the important things. Joshua, that first reading was from Joshua. And the Lord was telling him what he should do and what he shouldn't do. And he was a really excellent follower of Moses, and of course he followed on leading the Israelites. And so to begin with, the Israelites had a leader almost in the category of Moses, not quite, but certainly an excellent leader. And so Joshua, we looked at the first five books before, and now we're looking at Joshua. Do you remember the story of how they went across the Jordan and then they went to Jericho? And Jericho was a walled city. And what happened was that the Lord told Joshua what to do, and they got all the people, and there were a lot of them, to walk round the city, outside the city, because all the people of Jericho were there sort of feeling safe in their walled city. And they walked around each day for 6 days, they walked round the city. And that must have worried the people of Jericho. And then on the seventh day, they walked round seven times, and then there was a great shout and the walls fell down, whether it was an earth tremor or not that coincided. Sometimes God's miracles are actually the association of things, natural things, at a particular time. So we don't know what happened, but anyway, the walls came tumbling down, and that basically was the end of Jericho because the Israelites took it over. And then there were many more battles that followed on that. And when they were obedient to God, the Israelites, they had victory. They were successful. That's a lesson that is so simple and yet so ignored. When we are obedient to God, we will see the victory. We will see success. That's true of our private lives. That's true of our church life. If we are obedient to the Lord. And the whole story of these historical books in the Old Testament sort of underlines that point. Time and time again, they were obedient and they won the battles, but time and time and time again, they were disobedient and they lost. And yet God had promised that they would be able to take control of the Holy Land, as we call it now, the Promised Land. God told them, with people outside the Promised Land, all they were to do was to just, if necessary, conquer them, just in a normal way that would happen in, you know, warfare and so on. But what they needed to do in the Promised Land was actually to drive the people out. Doesn't sound very politically correct, does it? But anyway, that's what they were doing. And the reason why they were supposed to drive the people out of the Promised Land was because all of the people in the Promised Land were idolaters. They worshipped idols. And worship of idols was really attractive in those days. And so what God was doing was ensuring his people were protected from being tempted to fall into idolatry and to worship idols rather than him. And what did they do? They didn't drive all the people out. They did some, but not others. They disobeyed. And so what happened? They fell into idolatry. Now, of course, we never get into idolatry today, do we? Ha ha. Yes, we do. We don't worship little wooden images up on a shelf somewhere. We don't do that, by and large. But we do have idols. We are into idolatry. Just to mention three, and use a familiar phrase, money, sex, and power. There are three idols that we worship in this country. Money, sex, and power. And so we too can fall into idolatry. And that's what happened in the book of Joshua. And then Joshua died, and there was a leadership vacuum. And it's always a very bad thing. We need good leadership in society. We need it in the church. And unfortunately, the Israelites didn't have a good leader after Joshua died. And things began to go really well, really badly. They fell into idolatry. People began to invade the country. And if they had been obedient, the Lord would have protected them, would have given them the victory so that these invaders wouldn't be able to take over. But what happened was the invaders did take over. And the Israelites were at the mercy of them. And so what God did from time to time, you see, they got really worried, did the people. They got really upset that they were being invaded by these foreigners. And so they cried out to God, and God raised up judges. Now, don't think of a judge in terms of what we think of a judge. You're talking about some sort of military leader, some leader who is capable of leading the people against their enemies. And so this is what happened throughout the book of Judges. The people disobeyed, things went wrong, they got upset, they asked God to help them, God gave them a judge and who led them to victory, and then it was all okay. So what did they do? They disobeyed the Lord, and so everything went wrong, and eventually they were so upset they called upon God, and God raised up a judge who led them to victory, and so everything was okay. Are you getting bored? Everything was okay, and then they disobeyed, and so on and so on and so on. And that's the story of Judges. It just is like a cycle of disobedience, calling out to God, God sorting them out, sending them a judge, and then they go back on it. Do you remember the story of Gideon? Probably one of the most familiar stories, at least it used to be, in the book of Judges. He was very reluctant, if you remember, to become a judge. He didn't think he was up to it. And so he gave the Lord a test, which he hoped the Lord would fail. And I never can remember which way around it is. Let me make sure I get this right. So he asked the Lord that he put a fleece on the ground. And what he wanted as a sign was that the dew would be on the fleece by the next morning, but not on the ground. And that happened. Then the next night, Gideon asked for the opposite to happen, the dew to be only on the ground and not on the fleece. And that happened as well. And so he knew he was called. And so he began to lead the people, and he gathered together, what was it, 32,000 people. 32,000 people, men, he got together to fight against the invaders. And the Lord said, you've got too many. Whittle it down. And it kept being whittled down until he only had 300 men to fight against these powerful invaders. And so you can imagine what Gideon felt. But he obeyed, nevertheless. And one night, they all crept out towards the enemy camp. And they were carrying torches, not electric torches, obviously, torches that you'd light. And they were in jars. And they got trumpets, and they crept out silently. And then he gave a shout, and they smashed the jars and lit the torches and blew the trumpets. And the invaders thought there was a huge army had come to destroy them, so they all ran away. And so that was one of the ways in which the Lord gave victory to his people. But what did they do? You know what they did. When things were good, they began to disobey. And you know, we can sometimes use God like an emergency service, you know, the police, the fire brigade, and the ambulance. When things go wrong, we call him and he helps. Well, of course, he does that sort of thing. But the danger is then when the emergency is over, we settle down and we don't bother too much about God. And so we can do the same thing that the ancient Israelites did if we're not careful. So we can fall into idolatry. It may not be money, sex and power. It may be another idol that we have. We can idolize people, for example. But also, we can simply disobey the Lord, wander from the Lord. And then you get the book of Ruth, which is a lovely, lovely book. It's really, that's a very nice book to read. And the reason why Ruth is mentioned is because she was the great-grandmother, I think, of King David. I may have got that wrong, but anyway, she was David descended from her. And there's this wonderful story, because she was a Moabitess. She wasn't actually an Israelite, but she was married to an Israelite who died, and then she was remarried, and she became eventually the great-grandmother or whatever of David, King David. And God used somebody actually from one of the foreign countries in his grace to be there. And then we get the books of Samuel, 1 and 2 Samuel. So you're not going to be here all day. We're doing quite well, having got to 1 and 2 Samuel already. And you get Samuel the prophet. Do you remember the story of how his mother was, she couldn't have a child, it seemed, and she was pleading with the Lord to give her a child. And eventually Samuel arrived, and she dedicated him to the Lord. And when he was only quite young, she took him to the temple, to the priest in the temple, and she said that he could stay there and serve the priest and help in the temple. But he grew up to be a mighty prophet and a judge, so to speak. So he was another of the judges, and he was greatly used by God in his obedience. And one of the things he did, the Lord, I think reluctantly, allowed Israel to have a king. They wanted a king. I don't think the Lord really wanted them to have that, but anyway. And so he was directed towards a young man called Saul, who again didn't actually want to be king, but there you go. And Saul became a very effective king and military leader to begin with, but then he began to disobey the Lord, and ultimately the Lord rejected him as king. You see the story. The challenge to us is that we consistently obey the Lord, and we don't go off the boil. We don't wander off the path, because that's what Saul did, and so many others of them. Meanwhile, a young man called David, who was a shepherd, also a musician, he was brought to the court to play for Saul. And then you remember the story, I'm sure, of David and Goliath, this 9-foot-tall Philistine who was coming and mocking the Israelites and saying, "Come on, let me have one of your heroes to come and deal with me, and I'll deal with him." And so David goes out, this young man, doesn't take a sword, because as a shepherd, he was used to using a sling if there's any wild animals came to get the sheep. And he lobbed this stone at Goliath, and that was the end of Goliath. And what happened then was, of course, he became a hero, and people were shouting his praises, and Saul became very, very jealous. And so the story goes on in Samuel of how Saul actually tried to kill David on various occasions. David was very loyal indeed. And eventually we read of the death of Saul in a battle with the Philistines. And he was dead, and David became king. He was made king. So we're now in 2 Samuel. And God promised David that he would make him his name great, and his kingdom would be established forever. So what went wrong then? Actually, God is keeping his promise. That may not seem like it in terms of history, because the kingdom of David, you know, the kingdom amongst Jewish people seemed to fade out 2,000 years ago. But the kingdom that the Lord was talking about was the kingdom of great David's greater son. Who is great David's greater son? Jesus himself. He descended from David. David descended from Ruth. Jesus descended from David. So he is a son of David. And this kingdom the Lord was talking about was actually beyond the physical kingdom of David. And that's typical of the prophet. Sometimes you'll find that they're talking about something in history, and then you realize they're talking about something else, something bigger. And Jesus does that as well. He's talking about things that were happening soon, either at his time or soon after his time, AD 70 and the sack of Jerusalem by the Romans. And then almost immediately he's talking about something that's way beyond that, but it's all mixed up together. And so you have to be careful to understand it. He's talking about things that have not yet happened, things to do with his return to the earth. And so that happened with David. David was given the promise from God that his kingdom would last forever. But it wasn't the kingdom as it was then. It was the kingdom of none other than Jesus. And David is a great hero. He really is. And a very spiritual man. If you read the Psalms, it is amazing that a man who got so little knowledge in terms of the Bible compared with us, nothing of the New Testament and so on, that a man could write such deeply spiritual poems as are in the Psalms so often. So he was a great guy, but even he came to grief. He committed adultery with a woman, and he arranged for her husband, one of his royal guard, to be killed because she became pregnant, so it would come out. And he arranged for her husband to be killed in battle. And the Lord was really annoyed with him and sent a prophet to tell him just how wrong he'd been. And by the way, he wrote Psalm 51 as part of his confession. We sometimes look at that psalm. And Nathan predicted that calamity would fall the house of David. Well, after a long and successful reign, David died and was buried in Jerusalem, in the old city of Jerusalem, the very old city of Jerusalem. We lived in the medieval old city of Jerusalem, but next to it is a very ancient city of Jerusalem, and you can go into it, and it's actually David's city, and he's buried somewhere there. We don't know why. And then we get to Kings. We're almost there. First and Second Kings. And David, just before he died, appointed his son Solomon to be the king. And Solomon was famous for his wisdom. He wrote many of the Proverbs, for example. And he was extremely rich. Israel in those days was incredibly rich. And people came from really all over the then known world to see Solomon in his great empire. And so Solomon had asked the Lord for wisdom, and he was renowned for his wisdom, but actually he became as thick as two short planks. Why did he? Because he did what the Lord had really, in a sense, told the people not to do. He married a lot of wives. Well, that was probably a daft idea anyway, but that's not the point. He married a lot of foreign wives. That was the point. And what happened? They were all worshipping different gods, and he began to compromise over this matter of idolatry. And he allowed them to have facilities to worship their gods. And so it was that he came to grief. You see how we all need to be on the qui vive. If these people who were great people, who obeyed the Lord in wonderful ways, they could actually come to grief, then so can we. If we wander from what the Lord wants us to do, if we're deflected from the Lord's will, if we get into idolatry, something more important than God, someone more important than God, and so on. Anyway, the Lord raised up Elijah, the great prophet, and you remember Elijah had a battle with the prophets of Baal, the false god, on the top of Mount Carmel, and he challenged them. He said, look, we'll both, you build an altar, I'll build an altar, then you call on your god to light the fire on that altar. You don't light the fire, let him do it, your god, and then I'll call upon my god to light the fire on my altar. And the god who answers by fire is the real god. And so the followers of Baal, they started to pray and to shout and to do all their rituals and so on, and they cut themselves with knives and all the rest of it, all the stuff to do with idolatry, and absolutely nothing happened. And Elijah was mocking them and saying, well, you know, perhaps he's asleep, or perhaps he's gone on a journey. And eventually they got fed up with it. And so then it was over to Elijah. And Elijah not only had the altar there, but he actually poured water all over it, just to make sure it was not likely to, you know, catch fire. Then he called on the Lord, and the Lord, I don't know if it was lightning or what, we just don't know, but it was lit supernaturally by the Lord. And they got rid of the prophets of Baal, we won't go into that, and Elijah was the victor. And then Elisha followed Elijah. And so we could go on, I'm not going to go into any more details. And then when these guys went, particularly, things went from bad to worse in Israel. The people chosen by God, the people brought into the promised land, the people God had given great promises to and had blessed them when they were obedient, and they became so disobedient. Most of the kings were a waste of space. Most of the kings were just disobedient. They got into idolatry, they got into you name it, they got into it. Some were not. Josiah, for example, found, or at least some of his men, found the book of the law, probably the book of Deuteronomy, sort of buried almost in the temple. And so he had it read, and he was really upset because he realized they were not obeying the law. And so he made sure that they started to obey the law. And they had a great Passover celebration. So there were some good kings, but sadly most of them were not. And so it goes on. And the Lord warns them through the prophets, if you keep doing this, you will be exiled from the promised land. And they kept doing it. And they were exiled. And I'm not going to go into 1 and 2 Chronicles because they really repeat what is in 1 and 2 Kings. But just very quickly, finally, the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, they actually refer to the end of the 70-year exile. And Ezra and Nehemiah led the people back into the promised land. Ezra was organizing the rebuilding of the temple, which had been destroyed by the Babylonians. And Nehemiah was organizing the building of the protective wall around Jerusalem. And then the other historical book is the book of Esther. God is not mentioned in Esther at all, actually, it's interesting. Esther was a Jewish lady, and she became the queen of Persia. And really, it's a book about the Israelites that didn't go back to the land. They decided to stay in Persia. So that's the point of the book of Esther. And so that's a lightning tour of the historical books of the Old Testament. But we can learn lessons from them, that we need to keep our eyes on the Lord. We need to keep our eyes on the what the Lord has called us to do. And we need to ensure that we don't get waylaid by idolatry. In other words, things and people more important than God. But we need to keep obeying the Lord, and he will keep protecting us and blessing us. Even though, a bit like Gideon, we might feel so small and insignificant. I mean, we're not the biggest church in Christendom, are we? We might feel small and insignificant, but the Lord can use a small number in a wonderful way. So there are many lessons we can learn from these ancient historical books. And we can learn from their mistakes, and we can learn from their successes and their obedience. So let's make sure we continue to glorify the Lord and obey him in everything. Father, we do thank you for the story of your people, your ancient people in the Old Testament. Thank you for your faithfulness. Thank you for your protection and blessing when they obeyed, for your patience with them, Lord. You didn't judge them immediately when they disobeyed, but they persisted in disobedience and they were judged. Help us to learn from that, Lord, and constantly to obey you and do what you want us to do. However insignificant we may feel, individually or corporately, but to trust that you will give us the victory. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.